Wait, where are you? Hello. Check. There you are. Okay. Just a moment. Oh, here we go. Try this. 1, 2, 3, 4. Background music. Foreground music.
Heracles struck Aesop.
Several blows about the head. I can't guarantee you it was nothing Aesop said. Mute from birth, old Aesop took to sweet. Okay, I can't stay in sync.
What ensued was read by Pericles in a subscreen. Leave town.
All right, how about we fade out?
Leave town.
Okay.
We're fading out.
Not literally.
We're fading the music out.
Oh, okay.
All right, here we go. Hey, folks.
Hey.
So this is a special presentation from the Potts House. And we're trying something new. I was trying to figure out how to do the live stream with voices and music, and I wound up setting up in what you'd call our control room rather than
podcast studio.
Rather than the podcast studio, which is kind of a mess and has mouse poop all over it.
We haven't been in there for a while.
And
some Thanksgiving dishes got put away.
Yeah.
Entirely washed.
And then after that, we weren't in there for a while.
Yeah.
But the mice were.
Fancy that.
So I've been bringing pieces of gear out of there and trying to get this set up with my 2008 computer.
I mean, just to be clear, it's not like you're like got a sweet mouse poop out of the way to like walk through.
No, it just needs everything needs to be wiped down and cleaned. And
we don't want to be dealing with hantavirus, too.
All right. And reassembled. Yeah, it's kind of gross. And I rated it for parts for this computer. And I spent all day yesterday screwing around with some real vintage gear. Like a lot of my audio stuff is from the 1990s, early 1990s sometimes.
Yeah.
And just like endless struggle with trying to keep the stuff working. But I can't even install updated software because my computer is too old to run it. It won't install. It says, sorry, I can't support such a vintage computer.
Hey, what do you mean vintage? It still works.
Still works.
Apparently I'm vintage now.
Still works great. But anyway, like I said, so we're in the control room and not our podcast studio. And I have an all different setup cobbled together out of different stuff. The mics are the same. Some of my software doesn't work. The voice plugin that I've been used that I used in the whole run of the Grace and Paul podcast, like it lost its license manager or something.
I'm got my little fake lighter up.
pour one out for the late lamented Grace and Paul podcast.
Damn. That baby's 15 months old now.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing with the Grace and Paul podcast.
Yeah.
We were just barely getting it done.
Barely.
And it involved me staying up till like 4 a.m. every Sunday night and to produce the thing and get it out. And then we had another baby.
Yeah.
And
who was great?
Who was great? And we continued to get older.
Yeah.
And this all just kind of pushed us like one step
beyond
nearer the edge.
Right.
So a few things have happened since we last spoke here.
Yeah. One of my friends is like, I only get on Facebook on Sundays. Anything happened last week?
Last week, more stuff happened in 1 week than I think in any single week since 9/11, honestly.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I felt it coming, right?
Yeah.
Like I posted jokingly.
Yeah.
So next week we've got the time change, full moon, and Friday the 13th.
All in 1 week.
Stay safe, guys. Stay safe.
And yeah, last Friday, the Friday before last, I had a doctor appointment, and my heart rate was, I'm generally fine, but my heart rate was crazy high. And they actually gave me an EKG in the office.
Just to check, just to see.
Yeah, and it was still remained high. And it's like, well, EKG looked mostly okay, a little weird, but I didn't have any chest pains or shortness of breath. So, you know, I said, well, just take your pulse, you know, every day next week and see how it goes.
But we could feel the last week coming.
Yeah, exactly. It was this sense that everything was about to change, you know. Yeah. And that I think what made me so panicked is that no one else seemed to be recognizing it. I had been sending out emails at work and talking to people.
I've been talking to people. I think I've been talking to people personally and privately for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
2-3 weeks.
Well.
But I didn't like go public on Facebook and in my social circles until last week.
2 weeks previously, I'd been talking about, as I'd been asking at work, whether they were going to roll out like a set of contingency plans and policies to deal with the outbreak.
We haven't said it yet.
What?
The pandemic.
The
COVID-19.
The COVID-19 pandemic. If you're a historian from the future and this is the only surviving piece of media you could find.
We're talking about the COVID-19 pandemic.
Buried in the rubble.
Yeah. I don't want to get too apocalyptic, but I don't think this is going to go smoothly.
No, it's not. You'll hear me inarticulate and frustrated tonight.
Well, I think I want to say a couple of things right out of the gate, and I'm going to reaffirm them several times.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, the vast majority of us will not die from this.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of us will catch it. So most of us will catch it.
Possibly by the end of the year.
Yeah.
Like 70, 80% of the population.
Will have caught this by the end of the year.
Unclear exactly how high that number will be, but.
And most of us will survive, right? So let's just be very clear about that to begin with. Most of us will catch it. Most of us will survive the infection.
Yep.
And really, some people describe it as hysteria and panic. I like to think of it as due concern or due diligence or due prudence.
Right.
The concern is, let me put it in these terms, because this is my favorite one. Well, you know, that many people die every year from like automobile accidents. You know how many people die of the flu? I'm just saying.
We don't have a systemic tool to prevent that from automobile.
Actually, we totally do. Okay. That same sort of indifference that I see in people is what prevents us from stopping automobile deaths.
Yes.
But that's not the point.
Yeah.
We don't get all of the year's annual automobile deaths in a 2 week period.
Right.
At the same time, all needing hospital care in hospitals that are already 65% full.
Yeah.
So if you add all of the automobile deaths of a year to 1 or 2 weeks and bring them to hospitals that are 65% full, you'll have a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the concern is about. Because number one, containment was out of the gate. That horse left the barn like a month ago.
Yeah, a month ago it might have been possible to put in containment measures. That would have been the time to shut down public transit and send everyone home. And,
right, like a month ago.
Right.
And to try and keep
infected people out of the communities, even though we couldn't test to find them yet.
Right, not yet. But, so I'm a Midwestern housewife and I can read. These are my qualifications. All right, this is what I have.
Yeah.
I started to get concerned beginning of February. We started talking like, yeah, we got to do something towards the end of February, second half of February. And then I started asking around in all of our circles, like places we take the kids regularly and so on. So what's the plan here? What's the contingency plan?
We should emphasize that the epidemiological community, that's a difficult word. Epidemiological community saw this coming because it's been coming.
It's been coming.
Months and months.
Like the, you know, the cases, the first case appeared in like November.
Yeah.
We had, it was, became a crisis in December, January in China.
Right.
Like China was started like canceling a lot of travel for Chinese New Year towards the end of January. I mean, it's been coming. And I need to just take a moment to thank publicly the public health officials in China that bought us precious time. I'm sorry we squandered it.
But yeah, some of them, in fact, who died doing it.
Died doing it, right. And some of them, as soon as they got things under control in China, got on a plane and went to Italy and brought ventilators.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So all that said, so as a layperson, it wasn't hard to like see this coming on. So I'm imagining if you are, say, someone in charge of public health in the United States, then, in the state of Michigan or in any American state, or any American county, then you probably saw at least as much as I did, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little bit concerned that folks were not
doing anything.
And last week I started calling people and I was talking to people who have responsibility and they had been waiting, some of them for months, for someone to tell them what to do.
People were really expecting a hierarchical sort of top-down messaging driven by the federal government and propagated through the state governments.
And the CDC.
Yeah, and the CDC.
And the really hard thing I've had to explain to people is no one's going to come and explain to you what to do.
Yep.
You need to figure this out, and you need to do the right thing. And you need to do it yesterday, last week, last month.
Yep. I've been talking about how this is... Basically, it's not even just that there's no effective federal authority. There's a malicious federal authority in place.
Oh, it's openly malicious.
That is blowing resources in all the wrong directions and has contempt for expertise, open contempt for expertise, and the organizations that are in place, what's left of them.
Yeah. I got a little open contempt for expertise myself.
Well.
But it's hard, you know, it's well earned.
I'm not saying credentials. I'm saying expertise.
Oh, actual expertise. Okay, yeah. I think that's the better marker.
But then I've basically been saying this: the response is going to happen from the bottom up. This is the time for the actual anarchist left to rise and start saving lives. You know.
Well, and this is going to be their pretext for a fascist crackdown.
Right. So it's very important that
the anarchist
left people do it.
Right.
And try to reduce that pretext.
Right. That, you know, we're doing this. Everyone's getting fed. Everyone's staying home. Keep the emergency rooms empty as they can. Because there's really no stemming this at this point. I think if we had started social distancing 3 weeks ago,
yeah,
2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, a month ago,
we'd have the curve quite flat.
We'd be ahead of the curve, right?
Yeah.
But starting now and really kind of a slow, pathetic start out of the gate. I mean, really, I know people feel like this has been really challenging and this social distancing is extreme. But if we're going to start this late, we need to start with Italy's lockdown voluntarily. Voluntarily go nowhere but hospitals, groceries, and the pharmacy.
We needed to implement that, but on a voluntary basis,
saying? Yeah, we need to implement that this past week on a voluntary basis.
Before we have to have the National Guard in every city.
Implementing it at gunpoint.
Yes.
Right.
And actually shooting people
Shooting people who break it, and then also jailing people, which is already, it's a humanitarian disaster starting to unfold. In prisons and jails. In detention centers. It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
And this is how we get rounded up. right.
Yeah. We get rounded up, possibly trying to bring food to people who are locked down.
Right, who are locked down. Exactly. Who haven't had any food and can't afford to buy food and can't afford to have it shipped to them.
Can't have their, don't have their jobs, don't have their tips, right. Don't have their...
Don't have any income, yeah. And no way, there's been no eviction moratorium, so they're being evicted,
yeah.
Et cetera. So, yeah, don't have water in their home, so they can't wash. And so have to go to the hospital and then are homeless. And when they discharge, they can't obey the curfew and lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and frankly, this is the time to be letting people out of pretrial detention because it will lessen the load on the jail system and lessen the damage to the public health. All those people need to go home and shelter in place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some courts are starting to dismiss like misdemeanor cases.
Praise God.
Like I've been reading about that.
Oh, but I missed a thing I had prepped. I prepped a thing.
Yeah, we probably need to back up and do this in some organized.
But we mentioned the sort of it's not just incompetent, it's malicious.
Yes.
The CDC has this very short list of what they say just broadly people over, elderly people. Like the risk groups of COVID-19, folks who are at risk from COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
It's elderly people, immunocompromised people, stuff like that, heart disease. And it's just very broad and general and can kind of leave you feeling like, oh, well, and what a lot of people say, well, it's just those people, right? Actually, the WHO, and this is very interesting, it's harder to find this page on the World Health Organization's website now at the end of this week than it was at the beginning of the week. I found it easily on Ireland's public health website. the actual list, the explicit list, is if you are 60 years of age and over. I hear American physicians and public health experts talking about 80 and over.
Yeah.
Have a long-term medical condition, for example, heart disease, lung disease, diabetes, cancer, or high blood pressure. Have a weak immune system, immunosuppressed. And what that immunosuppressed is, you're undergoing cancer treatment, you're being treated for an autoimmune disease.
There's lots of possibilities, right. Yeah.
So usually, if you're immunosuppressed, you know this about yourself.
Someone's told you.
Or someone's already told you. But that list that I just described is more than 50% of the adult population of the United States.
Wow.
It's
can you recap that briefly?
Yeah, that list.
I think we should emphasize that.
That list of people are people who are 60 years of age and over.
Yeah.
Have a long-term medical condition like heart disease, lung disease, diabetes, cancer, or high blood pressure.
Uh-huh.
Or immunosuppressed. You have a weak immune system. That constitutes more than 50% of the adult population of the United States.
Of the adult population.
Yes.
Okay.
That's
not the total population,
but that's more than half the adult population of the United States.
Well, still, that's pretty sobering.
So that whole group.
Those are the vulnerable people.
Those folks are vulnerable if they catch the disease of experiencing severe illness and higher mortality rates.
And possibly long-term.
Long-term damage.
Damage to their lungs.
If they recover. So it's nothing to play around with. Yeah, now, again, yeah. I want to say, like I said at the beginning, this is important to recognize. Almost all of us will catch it eventually. Mm-hmm. By next year, 70% of us will have had it. Right?
Yeah.
I won't say almost all, but most of us will recover. Okay?
Yep.
But there's a significant number of people who will face severe illness and possible death. And if they are all severely ill, fighting for their lives at the same time, our hospitals can't function.
Yeah. So that's talk about the curve and how that flattens it.
So there's a piece, I think the most relevant thing, you've seen some of the graphics, I'm sure, the graphic memes going around, but the really relevant chart where you compare two things is the Spanish flu epidemic of 1918, comparing Philadelphia
mm-hmm.
with St. Louis. So in Philadelphia, they had a case of the Spanish flu. I don't like calling it the Spanish flu, that's an inappropriate term, but that's how it's known.
The the last the last major.
The I'll call it the 1918 flu.
Yeah.
The 1918 flu. There was a case in Philadelphia. The public health director in that region made a decision to allow a parade shortly after that case, right?
Was detected.
Yeah. It was like a couple of days within a week. And ultimately, there were like 17,000 deaths in Philadelphia from the 1918 flu. I mean, it really just tore right through the city. In contrast, about a month later, there was a case confirmed in St. Louis, and the public health director there, against everybody's advice.
Yeah.
Everybody hated this man. He shut everything down. Like 2 days later. Yeah, yeah, it was awful. But 2 days later, he shut down the restaurants, the bars, most public places, and churches. He wouldn't let churches meet. He wouldn't let religious services take place. Everything was shut down. By contrast, 1,200 people died in St. Louis.
Hmm.
Now, that's not a fair. You don't want to compare the numbers.
It's not a strict fair comparison.
It was half as many people per capita. Half as many people per capita died in St. Louis as in Philadelphia.
Well, it's certainly highly suggestive.
So,
what the
impact is. So that's what we mean by flattening the curve, because the curve in Philadelphia was everyone got sick all at once and continued to pass the disease socially.
So the curve is not the number of people who get sick; it's the number of people who get sick over time.
Right. The shape of that curve is a tall, narrow curve. If people get sick in a cluster all at the same time versus spread out over time, the curve is lower and more sloped.
And so what we actually want to see is so many, many people will get sick. We want to see that curve go along very slowly. We want to see like new cases appearing, you know, just a few each day.
Gradually. Because what that means is we'll keep it within the capacity of the health system to treat.
Because, whatever percentage of those cases that actually need an ER, a respirator, oxygen, medical support will not be happening all at once. Not overwhelm. And that's what's going to cause mass casualties.
Right. Well, and really throw things into absolute chaos, because in that situation, we're not just talking about casualties from the virus, because people are still stuck in this. Well, we've got to protect the immunocompromised. That's not actually the point. It should be.
Yeah.
That should be enough to act.
Yeah.
But the point here is that if the hospitals are at capacity for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, you could have a car accident driving to work. A car accident you could easily survive, but there's no bed for you.
Yeah.
I mean, any kind of random thing, you have a stroke that you could easily survive.
It's not just beds. It's because they're out of supplies.
Seattle's already running out of PPE.
And they're running out of doctors.
Right. Doctors are dying themselves.
Getting sick, having to.
Because they're working double shifts
constantly.
Right. So that's where this becomes a real situation that has to be planned and taken on head on. So this flattening the curve is really about, because this is another piece I have been emphasizing, that most of us will catch it, most of us will survive. There are some people who just won't survive this.
Yes.
And that's frankly unavoidable. We don't have a cure, we don't have a vaccine. That's actually just unavoidable. A lot of these deaths are going to be avoidable if we can provide medical treatment.
Mm-hmm. And even if people are destined to die from it, I would rather see them die in some comfort with at least palliative care rather than gasping themselves to death left on a gurney in a hallway, you know.
Yeah. Or
in the street.
Or at home.
Or at home having spread it to everyone.
Their loved ones unable to bury the body.
Yeah.
No, it's a real, Iran's an absolute catastrophe.
Yeah.
They have mass graves in Iran.
Yeah. They're digging mass graves.
So, we may not get there, but, it's a situation.
So, unfolding. So talk about, I want to mention what I've been feeling like Cassandra because I'm talking to people, and I have people like just a few days ago saying, you know, oh yeah, I'm still planning a vacation in Boston in a couple weeks. And I'm like just in shock.
It's like, are you?
And
have you heard nothing? Have you heard nothing?
And then I actually was texting one of my coworkers who will remain anonymous on Wednesday, and I said, you guys should, they're away at a conference, so you guys should go into quarantine for at least a while.
2 weeks.
When you get, well, minimum. Technically 2 weeks minimum, but I don't know that I could ask that, you know.
And even that's...
Probably not sufficient. But
2 weeks goes a long way.
But, and he texted back, why? Has something happened? Like, so I just had to, I just replied with this laundry list, like, TSA workers at San Jose and LAX, you know, first documented case in Michigan, which is now, I don't even know. I didn't check the numbers today.
I haven't checked today's numbers.
But it was like 60, you know.
60?
I'm sorry. Maybe not. Maybe not.
I think it was 6 and then 12. That's what I thought. But I'm not certain either. I haven't checked today.
Yeah. And then the first death reported in Michigan too. Yes. So, and then I just... they're starting to identify places where transmission may have occurred.
Oh, hey, look at that.
So fortunately, not places we or our children have been
frequenting. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
As this unfolds, the thing I think we need to realize is that this spreads silently.
That's
apparently
a very good point.
It's apparently you can pass it on before you are symptomatic.
For at least 2 weeks.
At least two weeks.
You may have no indication at all that
you have no symptoms, no nothing. You have no indication whatsoever. The only indication that you would have in that time period are the antibodies your body's producing against it. That's it.
So if you could get a test early.
If you could get a test early, you would know because you would have antibodies. But absent that test, you would have no symptoms and you can pass it on.
Mm-hmm.
And... there's
so yes, it's very likely that many, many thousands of people have it.
Or have it, or passing it on quietly, silently right now. Just because a lot of people are thinking, well, I don't have any symptoms, I don't have this or that, and, you know, I'm not at risk.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean you can't carry it to other people.
Yeah, don't become a vector. So that's right. What I wanted to say to my coworker traveling.
Like, don't become a vector,
like,
dude.
Don't become a vector. And then I also hear other people, you know, this is not about my workplace. I'm sure your workplace is the same.
Oh, gosh.
People are the same everywhere. But people are still having conversations like that preface it with these words. Well, if it isn't a hoax.
If it's not a hoax, if this is real.
And... my God, it was so pernicious and horrible for that to ever
come out,
ever
become a thing.
You know, I mean, or if it's not a Chinese bioweapon or whatnot. And then you have people still, including a lot of elected officials, insisting on calling it either the Chinese virus or the Wuhan virus.
Yeah, God bless them.
And like, this isn't relevant. That's not the, we think that's where the transmission and the origin occurred. We think we still don't have super clear picture of that.
At this moment, it may not be relevant entirely,
but it's not irrelevant at all because it's now
everywhere.
The global pandemic virus.
Right. Well, and just the sort of level of, so I think if you're listening and you're like, so wow, what can I do? What should I do? Maybe you've heard what we have to say here. Maybe you've read some things. I trust you to be an intelligent adult. I think you know what you need to do. All right?
People are starting to get the word out, but you have just today. Okay, I get things off my chest.
Go get off your chest.
Just today, there are elected officials, and yesterday, talking about how it's a great time to go out to the restaurants because they're all empty. You know, just a day or two ago, Memphis was celebrating like the, you know, big dance parties and promoting that stuff. And, you know, and Biden was just saying today
that, get out
and vote. That if you don't have symptoms,
get out and vote.
that you need to get to the polls. Meanwhile, Arizona is closing a number of polling places. They're doing their usual voter suppression of districts that they think are likely to go for Sanders.
Oh, Arizona would do that.
And they're not postponing the election, but he's basically saying it's fine to go out into these extra crowded
public places,
more crowded than usual public places if you don't have symptoms. But that's not the way the silent transmission
works
at all.
In fact, while you're symptomless is when you really pass it.
Right. And his supporters are overwhelmingly older.
It's kind of cynical on his part, isn't it? I'm just saying. You know what? Maybe he doesn't know. You know, maybe not. Maybe none of these people know.
His people know. He's It's hard to say whether he knows anything.
Oh yeah.
But so while we're recording this, the debate is going on. We'll probably watch playback or highlights. We don't have cable.
I'll just read what happened.
We'll read the
highlights.
But yeah, you should take this seriously.
Not a joke.
It's
not a hoax.
This is an inflection point, a collapse of civilization kind of event, the sort of the last gasp, literally.
For the record,
yeah,
I called it. I said it would be the bugs.
Yes. Well, so what I mean by that is basically we have been a collapsing civilization for a long time.
That's laid there.
And we are actually, because of this, and because we haven't been doing anything to turn the ship around for decades, we are now in a really fragile state.
Absolutely bone fragile. Well, like, it's like, you know what, you've seen these cups, like they're cracked, right?
Yeah.
It's already cracked, but it hasn't fallen apart yet, right?
Yes.
And the moment you put some hot tea in it,
yes,
the whole thing splits apart.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that's what we're looking at right now.
Right.
So it's all just, yeah.
So our recommendations are to do effectively what we're doing. We have actually been kind of sort of low-key preppers.
Well, yeah, we've been low-key preppers for a while, and we started having a discussion here as a household and a micro community and extended family start prepping and getting some things in the house for basically a 30-day self-quarantine.
So we're essentially going to be shut-ins,
more or less.
We have a lot of food.
We have a well.
We don't, however, have a generator.
Yes.
Or solar panels.
Yeah,
so we are still vulnerable to loss of power there.
Right.
I will still, I have to say it, unfortunately, be going to my job tomorrow morning. Because I don't have permission yet, like guidance, to work from home. And I think what I will be doing tomorrow is packing up some stuff and bringing it home.
So you can work from home.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's the thing I was about to say a few minutes ago.
Right.
Stop waiting for someone to tell you what to do.
Right.
Stop
waiting. Well, I haven't been. I've been pushing my
I know you haven't been.
Structure.
Like, and I wasn't waiting for the choir,
sure,
or for
right,
church or for anybody to tell me what to do.
Right.
I was trying to get them to join me so we could do this together for the benefit of the community.
I should emphasize that I work in an open office, which is nearly empty right now because a number of people were out at a conference. One guy just had a baby and we've just rearranged and moved into a lot of extra space. Mm-hmm. So I can actually go in and work and not even come within a dozen feet of anyone.
Right.
And so I don't feel that my workplace is high risk. I'm not actually shoulder to shoulder with anyone.
Right.
I am very cautious about hand washing and using the facility, like the restroom and kitchen, right?
Right.
Very cautious about that. But I don't think it's, you know, it's not the kind of work environment that a lot of people are stuck in.
Right.
And
well, like you have these auto workers in Windsor, Ontario, just walked out because they couldn't get a safe work environment.
Yeah, and as of Friday, my employer is not shutting down facilities, including in New Jersey, only
100 miles from New Rochelle,
less
currently
than that,
walled off by the National Guard.
Right. So they're instituting a lot of aggressive cleaning measures and whatnot, but they are not yet actually shutting down the facility. And I don't know what to say about that, except, anyway.
Except, good luck with that.
Good luck with that. I mean, I expect that they actually will have to abruptly take a much more.
Because they didn't plan for it. It's going to have to be abrupt and sharp.
Right.
Which is, and people think I'm saying some, I don't know what people think I'm saying.
What I'm saying is that they're going to suddenly have cases of many employees sick at once.
Yeah.
Unable to come in, and they're going to realize that transmission has been happening.
Has been happening.
In the facility for weeks.
And now, and most of them will recover.
Yeah.
Some of them might not.
But that they've got to stop that transmission.
Right.
And therefore shut it down.
And they're the folks who are like, well, if everybody gets it, then we'll get it over with. Yeah.
I have heard that. That's like the accelerationist view. That was my view, why that instead of voting for Clinton, we all should vote for Trump,
I was like, yeah, that's what the accelerationist view is.
Right.
Just vote for him. Get it over with. Yeah. Right. If you're waiting, if there's something you can cancel. I'm not an accelerationist either. I think it costs too many lives. Especially when I think it's possible for us to do a lot of these things voluntarily. It's possible.
It is. Now, what I really worry about are people who don't see. I mean, I worry about my job long term too, because if we're really heading into a huge recession, I've been laid off several times before. It's not good. Nope. And especially after we just got done spending almost 3 years paying two mortgages.
Yeah.
We don't have any cash reserves. We don't have any savings. We
moved here for this job.
If this job goes away, we're in deep shit. Instant deep shit.
Yeah, boy.
So here we are. But yet, I am probably will be able to do most of what I need to do from home. One exception is that I'm actually working with a team in China that up until a week ago or so was half of them were locked down under quarantine. Indeed. And so they had been, several of them did not have access to the prototype hardware that was at their office in China. So I had a prototype hardware set up in my office with a computer that they could remotely control, including a power supply they could remotely control to shut off and on so that they could turn it off and on again when it stops working. Right.
Oh, wow.
Right. So we set that up. I don't actually have the IT infrastructure to be able to set that up at home and manage it.
Right.
So that may have to go away.
Mm-hmm.
But
some of them aren't on lockdown anymore.
Some of them are back at the office, I think. Maybe all of them. I'm not quite sure. Stuff happens fast. But there's stuff I can do at home in this very home office. I can bring some prototype gear, hardware, and stuff home and get quite a bit of work done here.
Right.
While this is going on. Whether it's a month's worth, I don't. It's
a good
not,
question.
But
it's a good question.
But what I worry about are there are an awful lot of people that can't do that.
Can't do
Their jobs don't exist in that kind of space.
Right, in that kind of space. They don't exist at all. And how's that supposed to work?
Yeah.
We don't have any.
Exactly.
See, Italy's in the throes of it. Italy's in the deep grip of it. Italy put a moratorium on mortgage payments and rent, put a moratorium on evictions, said no one's power could get shut off because people can't go to work right now.
Right. And then, of course, you have the schools, the situation with the schools.
So the schools have been closed, but, most nurses have children in school. So how are they supposed to go to work?
Right, to care for sick people.
Where their children are...
And are we, are we supposed to open up new daycares where we stuff all the kids in daycares? That's exactly the opposite of what we should be doing.
Yeah, not actually a good plan. And it's true. Many parents have literally no other option other than sharing childcare.
Right.
But
which they're doing.
And I can't blame them.
Yeah.
But it's our failure because no, the answer isn't state childcare. We put all the kids in a childcare center. The answer is that every person.
You don't want kids to be raised in a state creche.
Yeah, no, I'm not there for that.
Okay.
Is every single person needs a home. All of us need to have homes to go shelter in place in.
Right.
And we need them now. So if the state is worth anything, it needs to provide them.
Right. And then businesses and industries that do service type stuff, restaurants and whatnot, I expect those places to go out of business fast.
Oh yeah. Their margins are razor thin.
Like only may have a few days runtime, if that, before they just have to close. I mean,
yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
Not just send people home and close for a few days.
But forever.
But can't make their rent, you know, whatnot.
Right.
And so even if we're only under, let's say we only are all really stuck at home, quarantined for 3 weeks, and then they're sort of cautiously emerging.
Very optimistic.
Yeah. Even with that, our communities are not going to look the same.
They'll be ravaged, right. Well, and I think someone was saying, but you know, we do this, we do all this social distancing and it's going to undermine the economy. It's like, there's two things. Number one, containment was off the table a month ago.
Yeah, with no leadership.
Right, it was off the table. Number two, when containment went off the table, the economy was off the table.
Right.
There's
you,
no...
You have to, right. You always have to think to yourself, well, who is the economy for?
Who's it for? What's the point of the economy anyway? If we have devastating human loss.
Right.
Because let's say worst possible case scenario.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We do nothing. We let it run its course and the hospitals are overrun. And let's say, you know what? Our population is not as old as Italy. Maybe it won't be quite as bad. The rate of it, the death rate, the mortality rate in Italy right now,
mm-hmm.
running unchecked in an elderly population is about 5%. 5% of the people that catch it die.
Wow.
That's not trivial. Okay?
I've heard statistics, sort of estimates here as mm-hmm. to what will happen in various scenarios. And the number of deaths sort of starts here at about 1.5 million and goes up from there.
I've heard as low as 200,000.
Okay, well, you've heard more optimistic.
I've heard as low as 200,000. But really, if we're honest with ourselves about how far behind the curve we are,
we're looking at
a million deaths. So if you want to pluck millions of people out of the economy, right. and not just anyone. A disproportionate number of our elders and healthcare workers.
Yeah, yeah.
It will be disproportionately weighted against our elders, our healthcare workers. And I know a lot of health insurance executives are excited about this. That means they can now hire lower paid healthcare workers who are not physicians with years of training. Their sickest patients will be dead.
Mm.
And their oldest patients will be dead. It's good news for the economy in that frame.
Right.
But if that is your frame, I don't think your economy is worth having.
Right.
It needs to die.
Yeah.
But an economy, so if we were going to save the economy for the benefit of the people here, we would have contained this and we would have worked on this, been working on that project in January, like Taiwan, like South Korea, like many of these places, like Japan. Japan didn't have any cases yet and they closed schools.
So, and it can't, you know.
I should say there's some speculation that Japan is under testing and that's why they have so low few cases, but carry on.
Oh, I'm just saying, I mean, I can't emphasize enough how much all of these interlocking crises are kind of hitting the fan at once.
Mm-hmm.
And not the least of them is complicated by the fact that this is an election year and we're halfway through a primary season.
Oh, okay. So is anyone taking money on the election? Anyone? Hello, anybody? Because I'm not sure it's going to happen.
You mean taking money on whether there will be an election?
Yes, yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure this is going to be one.
Right.
I'm not convinced it's going to be one because I think absent this crisis, I didn't see I really didn't see 45, like, I don't know, making a move like that.
It's a really weird situation because on the one hand, I think you now have sort of widespread agreement again among Never Trumpers and Democrats and leftists and independents and whatnot that this man is not working for us in our best interest, not capable of handling a crisis this. Yeah. I think that's the only people who are still in denial about that is the people who have had their brains scooped out and replaced by Rupert Murdoch.
Come on now.
Who are plugged into Fox News 24/7.
Yeah, that's not fair because I have lots of friends plugged into MSNBC 24/7 and they're dangerous folks too.
Yes. So I agree. But I'm saying the people I like who are still like vigorously supporting Trump and claiming this is the flu, it's a conspiracy theory, yeah. You know, and he's done everything perfect, basically parroting his party line, you know, it's like they're not reachable anymore.
No, I've got friends saying it's the virus that makes you sick, not me.
They're not reachable anymore. And so, but
I guess one way to put it,
I had a point.
Oh.
Originally,
we were talking about the election year. There's a consensus among Never Trumpers that said on it that 45 is not capable of leadership.
Oh yeah. So on the one hand, we have this happening where it's never been more blatantly clear for anyone with eyes to see, right? We have not just an incompetent administration, but a maliciously incompetent administration,
right?
With contempt for working people, just absolute contempt.
Right.
At the same time, again, I had a point.
I don't know what it was.
I feel the COVID coming on.
Well, no, I've had a lot of brain farts.
No, there's that happening on the one hand, but there's also this risk that, that they will go full on totalitarian state.
Full on. Well, and yeah. I'm not sure that risk is actually that far away right now. Yeah. I think that risk is very present at this moment.
Right.
And the failure, because look, Ohio is actually acting like rational adults. They closed schools, they closed restaurants, bars, etc.
Yeah.
And so on. Ohio's got, does Ohio that says testing already? Ohio's got testing coming online on Monday or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently testing is rolling out county by county, and like Wayne, Oakland, and Washtenaw counties can't figure this one out somehow. I'm not sure what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know.
So anywho, and we've got community leaders still going out to eat in Saginaw County.
Yeah. Talking and like bragging about it on Facebook.
Bragging about and like bringing kids to McDonald's for Happy Meals.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's a tough time. You should do something for the kids, but.
Oh, yeah. That was something else I wanted to get into the discussion is when you close schools, a lot of kids don't have a place to eat meals.
Don't have food.
And their parents are not prepared. Because their parents have been reliant on this program.
Their parents don't have enough money to buy them food.
Right. And they're also not accustomed to it because they're not because of their work schedule.
Right.
So you've got this massive experiment like going to happen with all these kids out of school where the parents are not accustomed to having such an intimate daily relationship with their children. The children are in crisis. They're going to be bored out of their skulls.
Yeah.
They're going to be pretty massive child abuse across the country. Yeah. Also crank that up by the fact that the parents are experiencing possibly the worst financial pressure
in their adult lives,
in their lives to date.
Right.
And trying to figure out what to do to keep their home and keep the lights on. And the kids are going to be
bonkers,
getting on their nerves
yeah
through no real fault of their own other than being kids,
being children, right?
So I fear for that. That's something I think about a lot. Yeah. Because we're already going bonkers
with our kids here at the house all the time. My God. I mean, you know, and actually, we do get out of the house pretty regularly, and it's going to be a shock to the system.
It's going to be difficult for them. So we don't know what's going to happen. I know what I'd like to see happen. I'd like to see all the upcoming primaries suspended, and every one of these states that still has a primary election upcoming needs to immediately convert it into an all absentee ballot system where all the ballots are mailed.
Yeah.
And they count them. I'm not saying they should use paper ballots. They should get them all out by mail. They should have been doing this weeks ago.
Yeah.
Because there's some of them will say there's not time for that. Well, yeah, there's lots of time if you have money and will.
Right. And they have the money. They don't have the will.
Right. So, but that's what they need to do. And, you know, they'll also, it's amazing how many people you can enfranchise that way too. But
isn't that weird? That's weird.
Yeah. But that has to happen. And I don't know what's going to happen with the census, because you don't want to be sending census workers door to door and become making them each into a vector.
Absolutely not.
Right.
Right. And then they get to carry it from door to door. How cool is that?
So, I mean, most people get that by mail, but they do in-person interviews too. But that's a hazard. So I don't know what's to become of that. But this is going to be bonkers. This is going to be, we're in uncharted territory.
Uncharted territory. And it's going to be a mess.
And the biggest reason we're in uncharted territory is we have no, I mean, we did, but not for like most living memory do we have a tradition of states that really support people, that really support workers in need.
Yeah.
That's been widely dismantled.
Yeah, we were leaning that way. I don't think we ever were that way, but we were leaning that way post Second World War.
Right.
And it was fine as long as blacks were disenfranchised from that system.
Yeah, right.
As long as it did not include black folk.
They can't get included in like the family wage.
The family wage and all those things. Then that was fine. We could have this workers' paradise that was Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
But the day black people get invited inside the factory,
mm-hmm.
All that's off the table. Can't have it now. It's not going to happen. And I think that's, and you see it, you still see it when people talk about, oh, well, I know Finland has that kind of education system. We can't do that here. Like, well, why can't we do that here? You know, it wouldn't work. Like, why wouldn't it work? Well, we'd have to give it to everybody.
Yeah, you got to dig down, and that's what you hear.
And what do you mean?
And it wouldn't be fair.
And it wouldn't be fair to give it to
people who haven't worked for it. Or whatever. Or
and some version of
criminals or undeserving or
it gets bonkers. Like, well, we can't have parents who don't vaccinate in that system. We can have parents that, you know, just all these things.
Yeah, you're going to make everything a means test, which is the liberals' favorite activity.
Right. So all these things and all these issues come to the surface. And what it comes down to when you dig deep enough is that we don't have any kind of national identity or shared sense of national self.
Yeah.
And that's largely racial. Our racialist policies are the root of that,
mm-hmm.
that lack of shared identity. Whereas Finland can say, oh, well, yeah, we'd like all of Finland's children to be successful. Yeah.
Racial policies are the root of it in the sense that, hey, look, that poor guy's trying to steal your donut.
Steal your donut. You don't want that, do you? Don't pay
attention to me eating 12 dozen donuts.
Right, this plate of donuts. You know, don't pay any attention to that. But it always, if you have to dig for it, but that's the essence of, well, we can't do that here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't think everything is about race.
No. Some of it's about class.
Some of it's about class. Well, and I think actually, because I actually do think it's all about class.
Yeah.
And I think that race is about class.
Race is weaponized class.
Right. It's weaponized class. Yeah. So to the haters who are always like, well, you can't address the race issues by addressing class issues. Actually, I think you can.
Right.
I think you can. I think it's actually the only way you can address them here,
yeah.
Because while we've weaponized class and race, we've gone all in to pretend that class is not a thing here.
Yes.
So when you address it and you talk about it, people suddenly have to confront realities that they've been looking at all their lives.
It's class is like the Matrix, right?
Yeah.
No one has been taught to see it, and class consciousness is fleeting, meaning you might see it for a while in one context, but your mind always likes to comfortably retreat. It's like the scene in the Matrix with Cypher where he's eating a steak dinner and basically saying he wants to go back in the plug me back into the Matrix. I know that this is fake and this steak dinner is not a real steak, but it's, man, is it delicious.
It is, babe. It really is.
So yeah, that's class. Anarchist organizing. What's happening locally here, and what can you advocate and talk to people about as far as, like, because if we don't want, you know, I'm not a big statist. So, like, you know, sometimes I call myself a socialist because I want social welfare programs, but I don't like seeing everything driven top down. I kind of despise it.
Yeah.
I want to see distributism and, you know, like local organizations, and really as local as possible, which to me means anarchists organizing.
Yeah.
But the problem is when everyone is poor and you know, and the corporations have been getting corporate welfare and people no longer do.
Yeah.
Then like
it's really hard to organize.
It's hard to organize and it's hard to get things done because individuals don't have resources anymore.
Right.
They've been strip-mined away from individuals. But given all that, people are organizing to mm-hmm. try and help people in a mutual, you know, mutual aid sense. So what's happening?
I've seen a couple of things. There's a Washington County mutual aid group up. There's a mutual aid network of Ypsilanti, the many that are both up. And it's a little dicey at the moment, right? Where it's dicey is the wrong word. Like we're still trying to find our footing about how to implement things because the state's actually being very slow in rolling some things out.
Of course.
Right. And at the same time, some of these things are only like actually possible by the state. Right.
Yeah.
Like the, I spent last week trying to get the health department to close everything. Mm-hmm. And,
when we say, we mean this literally. She's been on the phone every day to all these officials and organizations because Grace is the one in this relationship that can make a phone call without having a panic attack.
And having all kinds of like run around and voicemail and et cetera, right?
I've been shit posting on Twitter as hard as I can, if that helps any.
Well, and in fairness, I'm sure they're very busy,
yes.
Right? Well, especially now that this is like gone public, they're really busy.
Well, now they're like have a lot of eyes focused on them.
Right. Some of these folks that I spoke to personally, I've also been speaking to the bishop and speaking to our pastor and so on. We've got to basically cancel everything. You've probably seen the Atlantic article, cancel everything. That's what I'm talking about. And so now that that's done, not exactly done, but I've made those requests and people are starting to get things moving. So the other thing I was working on was trying to actually purchase some antibody tests for COVID-19. They exist. It's hard to get your hands on them. And but like, who's going to administer those tests? How is it going
to
happen?
DSA medics to use? DSA medics don't have access to a PCR, like automatic PCR machines.
Right. You can't. There's no way we could do PCR on the ground. PCR is polymerase chain reactions.
Yeah.
The antibody test for COVID-19 actually only takes 15 minutes, but it does involve a blood prick. So it's a bloodborne disease issue.
Oh yeah.
So there's lots of issues around it, and apparently the health department here is going to be doing it in 2 weeks, maybe three. Bless their hearts.
Yeah. It's just another example of how ill prepared we were.
If you have symptoms, they can test you at St. Joe's now. But you have to have, you have to be presenting symptoms. You can't just sort of like get screened and be tested as part of the screen to make sure, and then quarantine as needed based on that test. So some of these things, there's a lot of like, who's going to do it? How are they going to do it? How can they implement it? Where do you get the test from? There's a lot of that going on. But just broadly, in very broad strokes, we're pressing to get everything closed but the hospitals, the pharmacies, and the groceries.
Mm-hmm.
For everyone without a house to have one. And pantries. Food pantries need to stay open. And for
delivery. They have to change the way they do business, though.
Fundamentally.
Yeah.
They can only do deliveries.
Deliveries are people like, you know, someone comes out to meet you at your car and, you know, with a mask on. And
exactly.
Give them your order or whatnot.
Exactly. And I'm actually not looking at my notes. This is all from memory. And so there's closing things, canceling, and remembering this is not a snow day, right? So we can't just get together with our friends at the park.
Right.
We can't.
Although you can, if you live in a place with parks or whatnot, you can go out.
You can go to the park.
You just need to distance yourself. So we're still going to be taking the kids to the park to like hike.
Right.
On the trails.
We're going to be separated from other groups, though.
But we're going to be separated from any other groups, and they're not using the playground equipment at all.
Right.
Not even touching it.
Not even touching it. That's what we're talking about when it's not a snow day. So there are things you can do, but you can't go hang out with your buddies. You can FaceTime with your buddies. You can talk to your buddies. You can text your buddies. You can't go get together.
Yeah.
Right. Food, water, and sanitation. Some people don't have running water. I was texting you the other day about, so should I get the bleach? Because I actually don't use a lot of bleach. I use about a quart of bleach a year.
Right.
Right. So I'm like, but I could get for like $10, I can get like 3 gallons of bleach, and I can make all the sanitizing kits, all the sanitizing wipes we could ever need,
right,
and plenty to share.
Right.
So I'm developing sanitizing kits with a gallon of water, bleach spray, and some towels, some cloth towels. You can discard or rewash them.
So when I go out, when I have been going out, because I stopped going to restaurants last Monday, but I did go to a pharmacy and I went to some stores, you know. When I go out, I'm putting on gloves. I'm not masking up. I'm putting on gloves, and then afterwards, I'm stripping off the gloves, and I'm sanitizing my car steering wheel with a bleach wipe.
Yeah.
And then my anal stick shift and gear shifter, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, going in and out of work, leaving my desk for lunch, coming back from lunch, going to the restroom, coming back from the restroom, I'm washing my hands, washing my hands.
Washing my hands. In my sleep, I'm washing my hands.
My hands are raw.
You know that one? Like, I wash my hands so much, I can see my notes from 1995.
I know you went out on Friday, which was, you know,
dangerous,
you told me
hell
not to go out. It was a kind of a hazardous. You were masked up.
Well, I was fully masked, though, and I had clothes on that I stripped off when I got back to the house to put into the washer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, So masks are in very short supply. We have only a handful.
Mm-hmm. We actually had access to from before the panic.
Right.
Stuff
they were like for construction.
Construction and painting and stuff. Right. And nitrile gloves that are also like for construction and painting.
We had those, keep
a barrier between yourself. I think we got some of those when we started prepping specifically for this about a month ago.
Right.
But just to like, you touch the gas pump, you want a glove on for that.
Right. No, I wore gloves to go into played against sports. I bought a weight bench.
You did that, but go on.
Yeah, and similar to go to the pharmacy, I had gloves on, and then after each outing, I was like, those gloves go into the trash, and then I wash my hands.
Yeah. But the idea is to get sanitation available to people who can't sanitize everything,
yes,
because they can't afford it, they don't have running water, etc. So just some very basic tools for sanitizing, and, you know, for washing up as needed. we also have a protocol we're developing for like a social distancing protocol about how far to sit away from each other, mm-hmm. what to wear, and what the practice is to make a no contact delivery, to make a light contact delivery, like for someone who can't bring their groceries into the door.
Yeah. How to manage that if you're
need to.
So that the delivery person doesn't become a vector.
Doesn't become a vector. And if you get in light contact, you can deliver one once.
Yeah. Once?
Yeah, yeah. Like, so in other words, like you might do a series of deliveries if it's no contact, right? You might drop off a bunch of things. Whereas you can drop off to one person in one place for contact. Because you don't want to bring it from there to the next place.
We talked a little bit about how that might work. I mean, I would consider like you drop a bin at the front door and you call and you watch from a few feet back.
You don't want to touch the doorbell.
Yeah, right. You call on your phone and you verify that someone came out and got the...
Right.
And then the bin is considered contaminated when you pick up the bin later, so that has to go in a bleach wash or whatnot.
Oh, but I'm not done yet.
Okay,
There are other organizing issues. The goal of keeping the hospitals not overwhelmed... trying to get a small bevy of things, a place for everyone to stay, every empty hotel room, every empty rental, getting people so everyone's off the streets and has a place to shelter in place, getting pre-trial jail, people who are jailed pre-trial, getting them out, reducing prosecution, eliminating, putting a full moratorium on evictions and shutoffs, any water or power shutoffs, so people can actually stay in their homes, even if they don't have jobs. Even if you don't have jobs, you can still stay in your home because mm-hmm. we're going to stop the evictions and the power shutoffs.
A lot of people are going to be laid off,
right? Because that's coming. Right. That's coming, but you still need to stay in your home because we can't have you out in public places. We're closing all the public places,
right? And if you're,
are we going to put everybody in jail?
Homeless is not a good state to be in.
No. Really, we're going to not put everyone in jail and make that public health crisis? Because then they'll still have to go to the hospitals.
That'd be the hot zone.
Yeah. Right? So we can't create new hot zones. We've got to just, get people out of there as fast as we can. We're talking about pretrial people.
Yeah.
These are people who have not been convicted of a crime. They can go home and wait mm-hmm. rather than sit in the jail and create a hot spot. Mm-hmm. So jails, eviction, power, water. There was one more and I'm blanking on it.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's the idea right now is to keep people safe and able to shelter in place and care for their own children.
So we can't tell you, we don't know where you're listening to this. We can't tell you who to get in touch with. But if you poke around on Facebook or on other social media, I bet you can find a mutual aid group in your community.
In your community. And you can work with your mutual aid group. And you probably need a lot of these same things in your community.
Right.
And you can figure out who to call. You want to call your local sheriff. You want to call your local magistrates and judges. Right. And you want to call your local, municipal, city, and county elected officials to press for these measures so that people will actually be able to quarantine.
Yes.
Because, and honestly, there's no reason California's governor has done this already. There's no reason your governor, there's no reason our governor can't commandeer the hotels for extra quarantine beds, for housing for people that don't have a house to go to, and for, to create decentralized emergency rooms so you can stop infecting people at the emergency room site. So we could do this and we don't need a federal mandate to do it.
Right.
Your county health department probably has sweeping powers to do this.
Already?
Yes. Your county health department already has these powers and you could probably do this at a county level.
So we will try to have some links and documents. Grace is working on making stuff available. And this is sort of the nature of like bottom-up organizing is that when something looks like expertise that's been vetted and it circulates and the bad info tends to get weeded out by a lot of eyes as it circulates.
The good info creeps out.
Right. So, I mean, and people are looking for guidance. They're kind of desperate for guidance. So David Feldman, a podcaster I know, did a show in which he asked his guests what they thought we should do. And he got, you know, advice of like average quality, I guess, you know, a mixed bag of advice, and people clearly weren't informed. After I heard that show, I sent him a series of talking points, which I had gotten from public health experts, including from the site flattenthecurve.com. Mm-hmm. And then 2 days later, he read my talking points in the first segment of his show, and then talked about flattening the curve. And then he used that as he had been looking for a place, like a metaphor, you know, mm-hmm. to focus his thinking about the event. And he hadn't heard or hadn't like realized that this was the public health consensus,
right?
The flatten the curve concept.
Right.
And so when I sent him this, it clicked, and he,
oh
yeah, he titled the show, he organized the whole show around that concept of flattening the curve.
Yeah.
So you can have influence.
You can have influence. Talk to everyone you know.
I don't even have our podcast running, but I can still influence other podcasters. Right. So,
and really, you don't have to wait for someone's permission. You can do this.
Right.
You can make a phone call. And another piece is that several people, towards the end of the week, I started explaining to people, actually, you need to understand that I'm canceling everything. I'm not coming to any of these rehearsals, classes, appointments. I'm not doing it.
So when you're asking them to cancel, you have a vested interest.
Right. So I'm not coming to any of these things.
Right. So our kids were going to be in a choir concert. I'm not asking them to cancel. They finally did, but it took, they had to see it in the news,
right,
before they were convinced.
But the shift though, when I emailed and said, listen, I'm not coming, my children aren't coming.
If you opt out,
then they feel like they have permission.
You set an example because you represent other people who likely are going to opt out as well.
Right.
You're just the front runner.
Maybe. And it happened several times. Right. I would just say point blank, I'm not doing this anymore.
Right.
And the next email I would get is, okay,
we've closed.
We're not doing this.
Right. So you may have more
influence
than you realize. I mean, I'm not taking personal credit for this except as a joke, but there was an MLive story about Saginaw Valley State University staying open. And yes. I shared it on Twitter and was commenting about how this is a bad idea.
Right.
And a couple hours later, they announced that they were...
Right.
And I have no idea if my sharing it led to that happening or comment or spread. But, you know, you may be a little fish in a big pond, but you put out ripples and people feel them. And when things are primed, when people are looking for answers and guidance, if you're saying something,
people will hear it.
If you're saying something good, they'll hear it.
Right.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Shall we wind up?
Let's do it. It's been a while.
It's been a while. I'm going to play an outro song that's a little upbeat. And we'll say goodbye.
For now. Talk when we can.
I'm going to try and do a live stream thing, but I have a lot of technical problems and all that. Anyway,
see what we can do.
We'll see what we can do. Okay, here we go. Bye, folks.
Later.
my when we met long years ago, you weathered years improvisation. When we met long years ago.